This is an ABC podcast.
This is AM. Good morning. I'm Sabra Lane coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. First to the rains causing chaos in southeastern Australia. Victoria's facing its worst flooding since the 1970s. A number of regional towns in the state's centre, north and northeast have been evacuated. The swollen rivers break their banks, sweeping through homes and small businesses. And in Melbourne's inner northwest, about 60 homes along the Barabanong River have been told to evacuate with widespread rain causing floods. Tasmania and parts of southern New South Wales are also dealing with a heavy deluge. Our reporter Oliver Gordon has the latest.
Residents in northern and central Victoria are on high alert. Three towns were urged to evacuate on Thursday evening. Parts of Seymour, Carisbrook and Rochester. Temporary accommodation has been set up in those areas, and we know some businesses and homes have been inundated in these areas overnight. The flooding is also affecting people in metropolitan Melbourne. Some residents living around the Maribyrnong River in Melbourne's northwest have been ordered to evacuate their homes. Jennifer in Maribyrnong, which is just 8 kilometres from the Melbourne CBD, was evacuated this morning.
Oh, probably about 45 minutes ago, we had a knock at the door and three lovely people asked us what we'd like to do, evacuate or stay. We've chosen to evacuate. We don't believe our house, you know, we had a section of the house that we could stay in that would have been rather safe, but it's more the possibility of getting in and out of the property and the car and, you know, just inconveniencing SES.
Jennifer from Maribyrnong there, and we've also just heard that residents in Benalla are being evacuated as well. There are also widespread power outages across the state. In Castlemaine, a power substation has been shut down, leaving close to 10,000 without power. A spokesperson from PowerCorp has told the ABC there may be significant delays in water subsiding before power can be restored. SES State Commander Josh Gamble says emergency services are monitoring a number of hotspots around the state.
You mentioned Carisbrook, Seymour, Rochester, Benalla, and also the Broken River up into the back end of Benalla. There's a big clear focus in those areas and across also Lake Eildon and Lake Eppalock and the Severn and Castle Creeks. It's all those systems that are in major, and those are ones of the greatest concern this morning.
Yes, yes, is Josh Gamble there. Oliver, there's much more rain forecast over the weekend. Some areas appear to be at serious risk of flooding. What preparations have been made?
So emergency services are warning things could actually get worse in some areas due to unpredictable tidal surges. Authorities are keeping a particularly close eye on the Skinners Flat Reservoir that may breach in the state's northwest. Here's the SES State Commander, Josh Gamble again.
There is some work being undertaken now as we speak after we've created an evacuation order for the Wedderburn Township for a worst case scenario. Work continues with local government and the emergency responders in the town to remedy as best as we possibly can with the dam owner to see if we can assist in repair. Whilst we're not certain yet, there is some work propping up to ascertain that we can make that dam safe, but we are treating as a worst case scenario right now for Wedderburn to undertake evacuation to the relief centre and monitor conditions in the next couple of hours where we hope to either make safe or continue evacuation.
Oliver, other states are facing flooding as well. What's happening?
So in New South Wales, we have three emergency evacuation warnings in place for parts of Wagga Wagga in the New South Wales Riverina as flooding from the Murrumbidgee River continues to impact residents. Gunnedah, Warren and Wee Waa have also been impacted by floodwater with a number of access roads cut off. And in Tasmania, flooding in parts of the north and the northwest has escalated overnight. Evacuation orders remain in place for Lyenna to Latrobe and surrounds, and Meander to Hadspen and surrounds. Evacuation orders have also been issued for areas near Elverston and parts of Newstead near Launceston. The Bureau of Meteorology says it's likely record rain levels have been reached in some areas in the past 24 hours, with up to 398 millimetres in some areas.
Oliver Gordon there. Australia is one of the wealthiest countries in the world, yet 3 million people live below the poverty line, according to the latest figures. Soaring inflation and the housing crisis are making it worse. The reports from the Australian Council of Social Service and the University of New South Wales, and the council's come up with one solution on how to reduce those living below the breadline. John Daly has the details.
At the Tranby Crisis Support Centre in the middle of Perth, 65-year-old former nurse Priya is getting some food and a cup of tea after a night of sleeping rough. A serious motorbike accident put him out of work, and Priya says a lack of accommodation and rising living costs eventually left him on the streets.
As time goes on, the richer get richer and the poorer get poorer.
How long have you been on the streets for?
Over 12 months now. Accommodation's getting more and more expensive, even for the homeless. To go into a accommodation that's designed for the homeless and all the people that are invalid has become more and more expensive because of the cost of fuel and the cost of living has risen. And it's not going to change. It's just getting worse and worse.
Rhys Powell runs the Tranby Centre for Uniting Church. He says the housing crisis in particular is pushing more people into poverty.
Within the last 6 months in particular, we've seen our numbers go from 120 per day to, on average, 220 to 250 each day. We're currently only funded for 70 people.
A new study from the Australian Council of Social Service and the UNSW delves into the latest available ABS data from the 2019-2020 financial year. It puts the poverty line at $489 a week income for a single adult and $1,027 a week for a couple with two kids. In the first year of the pandemic, 3,300,000 people, or 13.4% of the population, lived below it. ACOS CEO Dr. Cassandra Goldie says rising living costs are now pulling more and more Australians under.
The stories we are now hearing are really heartbreaking. Common stories include people living in caravans, not being able to afford shoes, living on bread and jam, and giving up the family dog because you cannot afford to keep it.
The report also charts the difference made to poverty rates by almost doubling JobSeeker during the onset of the COVID pandemic. Cassandra Goldie says the extra income support saw the poverty rate drop to a 17-year low of 12% for a short time.
The income supports lifted 646,000 people out of poverty, including 245,000 children. We haven't seen a dramatic reduction in poverty like that since Bob Hawke made his commitment to end child poverty in Australia over 30 years ago.
The council has repeatedly called for JobSeeker to be lifted from the current rate of $48 a day to at least $73 a day. In a statement to the ABC, Social Services Minister Amanda Rishworth ruled out any increase to JobSeeker in the upcoming budget. The minister says the JobSeeker rate will be considered budget by budget. But the government must also be realistic, given there's $1 trillion of national debt. Cassandra Goldie says the budget needs pragmatic ways to raise revenue to support those in poverty.
I think it's incumbent upon every person in Australia to question themselves, to say, do I, for example, need a tax cut when I'm earning income of $200,000? You probably don't.
At the Tranby Centre in Perth, Rhys Powell doesn't expect to see poverty rates decline anytime soon.
Yeah, I think it is going to continue to increase until we get more crisis accommodation, transitional, and we look at more government housing.
Uniting Church WA Operations Lead, Rhys Powell, John Daly reporting there. Many who are struggling to survive resort to using payday loans to make ends meet as they offer quick cash and easy repayments. But for some, signing up starts a cycle of debt that's almost impossible to escape. Predatory practices, high fees, exorbitant interest rates are rife in the sector, which mainly target low-income earners who have limited options. The federal government's aiming to pass new legislation by the end of the year, putting more protections around payday lending practices. Here's political reporter Dana Morse.
Car repairs, rent, doctor's appointments, even basic food and essentials. These are just some of the reasons clients of financial counsellor Lyndall Milburn have turned to payday lenders for help.
People don't borrow these loans for frivolous reasons. They don't have high incomes and they kind of need something straight away. They make it sound really, really easy in their ads. If you need a bit of money, just come and see us. We'll give it to you. And it is actually that easy. But what the advertising doesn't disclose is the costs. The 20% establishment fee, the 4% interest per month, which equates to 48% interest per year. They're just so expensive.
It's almost exclusively financially vulnerable people who access payday loans.
So all of my clients are in public housing community housing or homeless, with the majority of them dependent on Centrelink for their income. And it just comes down to Centrelink not being enough money. They're the best budgeters. If they can get through on Centrelink, they're better budgeters than me. But when unexpected costs come up, there's just no way that they have the capacity to save for any of them.
The fee structure and high interest rates often lead to clients taking out more loans just to cover the cost of repayments. One of Lyndall's clients is servicing 7 different loans.
After she pays the payday loans and 25% of the income on rent, she is left with 11% of her income. And that comes down to $150 a fortnight for food, utilities, cars, kids, clothing, phones, everything.
Consumer Action Law Centre Policy Director Tanya Clark says that's how many people get trapped in the cycle of debt.
They've got themselves into a debt trap as a result of being sold multiple payday loans and consumer leases and other credit products.
The federal government wants to crack down on payday lenders, implementing recommendations from a review of the system commissioned by the former government, something Ms Clark has been waiting a long time for.
In fact, you know, really they're 7 years overdue because the independent Treasury review of small amount credit contracts, you know, took place back in 2016. We've really been waiting a long time for it. So the protections, yes, are timely, but they're also overdue.
The reforms include capping repayments to 10% of a borrower's income, prohibiting lenders from sending unsolicited offers to applicants and referring customers to unregulated credit providers, and introducing anti-avoidance measures to stop lenders from restructuring and reopening dodgy operations. Financial Services Minister Stephen Jones says the government is doing what it can to make payday lending safer in a cost-of-living crunch.
We know that as inflation goes up, as cost-of-living pressures start to impact on households, they'll find themselves in desperate situations. We want to ensure that they're accessing credit as necessary in a safe way and that they aren't exploited in these circumstances.
Stephen Jones is the Federal Finance Services Minister. Dana Morse reporting there. This weekend, China's ruling party will begin holding its biggest meeting in 5 years, where the country's leader, Xi Jinping, is expected to extend his rule beyond a decade. While there are some hopes the Communist Party Congress could act as a circuit breaker to reopen China's borders and repair its relations with Western countries, experts say it's likely it'll take the superpower in an even more ideological direction. Here's East Asia correspondent Bill Birtles.
Just days out from the Communist Party Congress, state media is laying it on thick. A documentary series called The Navigator shows crowds fawning over Xi Jinping in scenes looking more and more like North Korea. The propaganda overdrive in the lead-up to the Congress leaves no doubt Xi Jinping will remain in power after the Communist Party's new leadership lineup is revealed at the end of the week-long meeting. Of more interest is how many of his loyalists can he stack in the positions below him. The more he reshapes China's ruling party to his liking, the better his chances of staying leader for life. Few inside China publicly offer blunt language about Xi Jinping these days, but a Beijing political commentator who was ousted from a top university, Wu Qiang, describes Xi's style of governance as totalitarian.
Ahead of this Congress and over the past 10 years, he has worked to build up a personality cult. Now, by amending the Communist Party constitution, he intends to establish himself as what's called the Great People's Leader, just like Chairman Mao, sort of like a mythical figure.
Wu Qiang says within China, Mr. Xi's biggest achievements of the past decade are an anti-corruption drive and a campaign to end extreme poverty. He says both programs have made a difference. But politically, he says China will continue its more repressive turn in the coming years.
In the past decade, Xi has used the politics of fear to consolidate his personal totalitarian power. He talks about crises in the Communist Party face, like a collapse similar to the Soviet Union, color revolutions, national security threats, terrorism, and he portrays himself as the savior of the party. But in the eyes of scholars, these are exaggerated threats.
COVID is also a major threat in the eyes of Xi Jinping. Despite hopes the Congress might allow a reset of his strict zero COVID policy, recent state media editorials make it clear that won't happen, meaning China's borders will remain closed, keeping the world's most populous nation cut off from the world.
China's relationship with the West has been difficult for a number of years, and that trend is likely to continue after the Congress.
Neil Thomas is one of Australia's sharpest China analysts based in Washington for the Eurasia Group. He says Xi Jinping's likely to put China on an even more ideological foreign policy path.
China is going to play an increasingly active role in global governance to try and undermine Western notions of democracy and human rights across the world and to take those off the international agenda as much as it can.
He says those expecting better ties between China and Australia after the Congress shouldn't get their hopes up. This is Bill Birtles in Taipei reporting for AM.
Young soccer players from disadvantaged backgrounds in Adelaide say they're being squeezed out of the sport because of high costs and a lack of opportunities. And one club, set up to make the game more affordable, has been told by soccer's governing body in South Australia there's no room for them. Ethan Ricks reports from Adelaide.
For any seven-year-old, playing soccer is just about making friends and emulating their heroes. Craig Taylor was all set to cheer on his son Kai in his first season of soccer with a new club, Adelaide Youth FC. It was created earlier this year for families like his struggling with the rising cost of living.
Costing food, costing fuel, mortgage rates have just gone up. So it's a massive strain on the average income household. And most of the average families have got two children. So, you know, if two children are falling into soccer, you know, that's up to near $2,000 a year. It's not affordable.
But a last-minute decision by Football South Australia means the club won't be able to participate in the Western Suburbs competition, pushing families like the Taylors out of the game.
It's been between my wife and I just talking about the financial side of it. It will be a conversation with Kai. You know, if we can't afford it, you know, we'll have to explain to him, you know, mate, you have to stay in football, Aussie rules, just purely because it is a cheaper option at the moment.
Adelaide Youth FC offers members' fees for often a fraction of the cost of other clubs. But Football SA says there isn't room for the club in the area and it would drain existing clubs of players. Tim Quinn is the Adelaide Youth FC president.
I started this club because football is out of reach for a lot of families. We speak to people all the time and they say, how do we have, you know, $1,000 per child to go and play football? It can be cheaper for the really younger juniors, but, you know, you're looking at, you start around $600-$700 and it goes up to $1,200 from there as you progress. And again, for one child, that's a lot of money. For two or three children, that's a hell of a lot of money.
Football SA has offered a solution that would see the club added to a league 45 minutes away. But Tim Quinn says that won't work for the families at Adelaide Youth FC.
Those people that are supporting us at the moment, they're all local to the area. It's not practical for them either. It goes against the purpose of the club.
With trials starting this weekend, the club is running out of options. South Australia's Commissioner for Children and Youth, Helen Connolly, says rising cost in sport is a huge barrier for child development.
You know, things like sport and connections to communities and good friends are really protective factors for children. So if you grow up with all of those things around you, then it does make you, it gives you networks outside of your family, which is really positive. But there's really positive health benefits and social benefits from being involved in organised sport.
Commissioner Connolly says disadvantaged children are the ones being left behind.
And that we shouldn't be able to just write whole groups of kids off because their families don't have the money for that.
In a statement, Football SA says it's working side by side with Mr Quinn to find a suitable club to join or to establish a new club in an alternative area of need.
Ethan Ricks reporting there. That's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hello, I'm David Lipson. Coming up on This Week, more brutal and more dangerous. We examine the new phase in the Ukraine war. Also, electricity prices set to soar in Australia by up to 35% next year. But the government is still promising to cut power bills. How so? Keep listening to hear This Week or get it on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.